Now, every 5 years in China, officials from the ruling Communist Party meet for a week to set the political agenda for the next two decades. This week is the week. 2,200 top officials from the party are meeting to pick China's next leaders, set social and economic policy, and get their nation ready for the Olympics. Now, it really is a stage-managed event, and certain topics are listed as completely off-limits. Still, given China's economic rise and what happens at this conference will clearly not only affect the Chinese, but also the rest of the world through the year 2022. One of the most knowledgeable people in America about China's Communist Party and its inner workings is Li Chang, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution who grew up in China. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What is the one big issue about China's future that these leaders will have to address this week?
It's the selection of the successor to Hu Jintao. It's the question after who. Who? The first is Qiu, Hu Jintao's name. The other is WHO. Now, they have two
Abbott
options.
Abbott and Costello.
One is to select one single leader. This is the way that Hu Jintao was selected 15 years ago. But now there's no appearance leader like Hu 15 years ago. And because these leaders are so similar in terms of credentials, backgrounds, and performances, etc. Now, if even you select one leader, the backlash against that person could be overwhelming, then create a succession crisis. But if you choose two or three or four possible candidates, and that's the way probably they will do, but you create the open the door for competition and the political lobbies will start. So this is the dilemma they face.
Well, China has a one-party system, but from what I understand, there are two major factions at this Congress, the elites and the populace. Tell me what each stands for.
Well, when the elite coalition represents the interests of the coastal region and also entrepreneurs, middle class, and those well-to-do people, and but the populist coalition represents the inland region, and we may call it the red states in China. The other we can call it the blue states. Now, the interests of the migrant workers, farmers, and also urban poor. Now, they also have the class background and the geographical regions and of the leaders reflected in that way. Now, but at the same time, they also cooperate with each other. From 5 years ago, Jiang Zemin and in the early on, Deng Xiaoping emphasized coastal development. They talk about to get rich is glorious, let a small number of people get rich first. But after 20-some years reform, still the other people lag far behind.
That's a big thing that the U.S. press has written quite a bit about, this divide, this economic divide between the rich and the poor in China. What needs to be addressed considering that issue?
The Hu Jintao reached out. He used a populist approach to try to waiver the tax for farmers and try to give more decent policies towards the migrant workers. They are the second or third class citizens of China. And try to emphasize to reestablish a social safety net and give the basic public health. So that populist approach tried to reduce the tensions, and otherwise China will be in revolution. To a certain extent, this is one party, two factions actually save the Chinese Communist Party for the moment. But then this kind of elite competition will eventually lead to a more competitive political system because Chinese society has already changed, and people more than any time before understand their interests and try to protect their interests and try to find the leaders in the in the party to represent their interests.
I think that when a lot of Americans anyway sort of think about China, they have this image from years and years ago of that guy standing in Tiananmen Square in front of that tank, and it seemed like there was a point where things were about to come apart at the seams. But of course, there's been all this economic growth in China. Are things more stable now? I mean, how stable are things, and do they have a good hold on things?
It's difficult to say because, on the other hand, a lot of social protests, usually against the local leaders, not the top leaders like President Hu Jintao and Premier Wen Jiabao, they are quite popular. That's why I call them populists. But at the same time, that there's people, more and more people realize China's political reform lag far behind. China's political system becomes increasingly inadequate in terms of addressing the complicated needs in society. But on the other hand, in contrast to 1989 Tiananmen, at that time it's the more street protests. But now they want to find institutional means and more incremental changes to improve China's political system.
You make up an interesting point because President Hu Jintao, he's going to lead for another 5 years, correct?
That's correct.
Now, he gave a 2.5-hour opening address yesterday.
It was like 65 pages long.
Yeah, and he offered to hold peace talks with Taiwan, which China claims is a territory. That is, as long as Taiwan doesn't pursue independence. There's been so much discussion about human rights issues, especially with the Olympics happening this summer. Will there be any change on social issues? Is that possible?
Well, social issue already in the agenda, and that China is actually not afraid of talking about human rights issues. This is also a big change. And but on the other hand, that you know, the format, the style of this Congress still remain the same. To a certain extent, still lack of transparency. Although, if you talk to the taxi driver, they will tell you which leader belongs to which faction with accuracy. Hmm. But on another hand, factional politics is still not legitimate. And because they are very nervous, things could be out of control. But at the same time, they face a lot of daunting challenges, environment, energy shortage, and et cetera. But also on the international front, look at what you know happened now this week, you know, Dalai Lama's visit. It really happened at the same time. It's a really embarrassment for Chinese leaders. Therefore, they really protest very strongly. But also the Taiwan issue is still could be a fresh point. So but the Olympics certainly is China's coming out a show. But at the same time, that China realized that the 10,000 foreign journalists will come, and they want to, you know, try to improve China's image, but still yet to see.
All right, if I can be a self-involved American for a moment,
can you
tell me what will be addressed this week that will directly affect the United States?
Well, it's, you know, how China should be accommodating the foreign pressure in terms of to meet international norms and to be a responsible stakeholder. That's a crucial issue. But at the same time, China already emerged as an economic player in the global affairs. What happened to China, economic front, will have an impact to global market. And also the China's success or failure in terms of political experiments also will have a strong impact to China's neighboring countries and the entire world.
Li Cheng is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a specialist on China. Thank you so much for explaining the Congress to us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's Tuesday, and that means it's new music time. So coming up on the BPP, we're going to check in with Melissa Mayers of Rolling Stone magazine. She's going to talk to us about some well-known artists. A lady named Aretha Franklin you may have heard of.
I downloaded this first thing this morning onto my iPod, these rare and unreleased tracks.
Well, you know, last week we had on a show, I think it was Melissa. Yeah, no, it was
Andy Langer.
Andy Langer talking about what's her name? Sharon
Jones
and the Dap Kings. And I forgot until that moment how much I adore Aretha Franklin because they sound kind of similar. So I'm getting totally into it. That's very exciting. Also, we're going to talk about a band called Beirut, a little less famous than Aretha Franklin.
And someone else from Rolling Stone is going to come on by Jancy Dunn, who has written this great book about her exploits as a music journalist. And she's going to walk through that Sigur Rós interview that Luke did that's gotten traction. It was on BuzzFeed, Metafilter.
Yeah, it was
200-plus comments on our blog.
I don't want to use the term Christ-like. But the level of sacrifice that I give for this show, to have 214 comments telling me I'm the worst interviewer ever, well, I'm just saying, I'm not above
216
it.
After that.
All right, I'm sorry.
Also, we have we're going to take a look at the most emailed, most viewed stories on the web, including my personal favorite about a Muslim Barbie doll. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. You're going to get it again.